Hey, welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club podcast, and happy 4th of July. Thank you for spending your 4th with us. I am Scott Stimson, your host from International Computer Solutions. If you're looking for computer solutions anywhere on the internet, I would appreciate it if you'd get a hold of me, Scott, at internationalcs.net. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club. Our meeting for July 4th, 2020. I hope you enjoy. Tech on.
Curious what we're doing.
Did you all get the email this morning?
Yeah.
Yep.
Two of them.
Two of them.
Well, I get one from Scott and one from the computer club.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, Scott, today's the day to look at explosions on YouTube.
It is.
And the best one is this guy that makes his own black powder. And he's got a pile of it on his in front of him on a table. And he says, okay, I'm going to light my black powder now.
Okay.
He says, oh, just a minute, I'm going to turn out the lights so it looks better. And then you see this big flash, and it knocks him off his chair. And when he comes back, he's got soot all over his face. And he says, oh, I guess I shouldn't have done that.
All right, where's that link, Paul?
Well, it has to do with homemade black powder or gunpowder.
Here comes Judy. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Judy.
Everything feels like it's working correctly today, Judy.
Good morning.
Good morning. I've already hit the YouTube streaming button, just for your FYI.
Okay, I won't say anything naughty.
Okay. That won't be any fun, though.
I know.
That'll be a first.
Paul,
it'll be on it.
What's the Google search, or what's the YouTube search I'm looking for? Black powder?
Either gunpowder or homemade gunpowder, something like that.
This is
I could do it too.
There we go. Why am I in studio? I don't want to be in studio. Get out of here. I just want to go to YouTube. You would think the YouTube homepage would just be full of explosions today.
Yeah.
Don't let me jinx it.
Come on, where is he? There's a lot of different items here. How to make black powder. That's not it. This guy's a doofus sitting at a table with a pile of black powder in front of him.
My black powder search is getting lost in black power searches.
Oh, no.
Is moron actually a keyword? Black powder moron?
It could be.
I blew up my gun. That doesn't look right.
Boy, there's more here than I thought. This homemade gunpowder bomb.
You be careful. The FBI will be looking for you.
Yeah.
Black powder versus smokeless powder. Oh, who's with us?
Oh, there's homemade gunpowder cannon.
Good morning, Linda. We haven't quite started yet, but we're already in conversation about silly internet stuff, and I have pressed the stream button on YouTube for your information. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent.
Good.
We were just looking for things to go boom on YouTube while we waited till 9 o'clock to officially start the meeting.
Oh, okay. How's everybody on this 4th of July? I realize there's some Canadians on here, but you just had Canada Day.
Oh, well, it was a nice quiet Canada Day. We don't hold a candle to you guys and your fireworks, that's for sure.
I found a...
Let me show you how to create an amazing app using stock footage. Go to ArmGrid.io. Look at all this great footage.
What happens if I try and share this?
This is a solid chunk of sodium metal. This stuff is number 11 on the periodic table of elements, and it is extremely reactive if it comes in contact with water. So a few months ago, one of you left a comment asking me to flush a piece of sodium down a toilet, which seems like a ridiculous request.
That's a pretty interesting effect you got going there.
Yeah. See, I had to try and blow it up with something. Just moments before we're starting. I'm imagining
just
when I'm
hit
on
your
YouTube,
correct? Hit your breaker switch in the house. That'll do it.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize how many homemade black powder flicks there are.
All right, Paul. Remember what Bill said. You're going to end up on a list.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Oh, I forgot.
Hey, you're okay.
I forgot the keyword subversive.
Well, Antifa or Black Power or some one of them will do it.
Oh, the whole Antifa thing. I've got a number of friends and family on Facebook and on Twitter that have just proclaimed themselves Antifa. They're like, he's looking for an... I'm Antifa! Have him come talk to me! They've renamed themselves Antifa in their screen names. Just to spite him.
That's how to get on a list.
Yeah, well, you know, we joke about the list, but the truth is we live in a world where you're either on the list of people for the list, or you're on the list of people not on the list.
Yeah, I'm listless.
Impossible in this millennia. You're listed somewhere.
So, Scott, talking about getting on lists... We just acquired a an Amazon Dot. So,
oh, fun.
That's your name over in the corner is listening to us.
There we go. Now we're definitely going to be put on lists.
If I find this thing, I'll forward it to you during the week.
Hey, Dave, we're just about to get started. We're just shooting the breeze, and I've already hit the stream on YouTube button, just so you know.
Oh, I found my save. No. By the way,
Paul.
Yes.
Alexa lights up bright red every time you talk.
Oh.
Hey, I'm glad you got a Dot. That's one of my topics today. I've come with some topics from last week that needed some questions answered, and a cool topic about Alexa. So we'll get into that.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
You have to rename her something else. So that when you're talking about her, we have a name for her, I won't say. But you have to rename her so when you talk about her, her ears don't perk up.
You know, we asked Alexa yesterday, how do we change your name? And she said she did not know how to do that.
No. You just change it with yourselves and call her something.
Yeah, like that stupid bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is so you can talk about her behind her back. I mean, she's still listening, but she won't respond.
Right.
That doesn't work, Bill. There's too many of those.
True.
You can change the call, the hot word. What do they call it? The keyword.
Keyword or something.
Yeah, but I think there's only four in the Alexa system. I bet your thing just went off, didn't it? Because I said that. Alexa...
No, it doesn't work because I'm listening with earphones.
Oh, okay. So yeah, we can't set it off. I just set off a bunch of other people's Alexas though at some point.
Yes, you did.
But you can change it to computer. I know that's one of them, and then there's a couple others you can change it to. But it's really limited.
Hey Google.
No, yeah, we just have our own pet name.
What's that?
We just have our own pet name, and then she doesn't perk up.
Yeah, that's right. We'll call it Echo, or I always try and call it Echo because I'm recording this kind of stuff.
Hey, and, Judy, pull the picture down. We can't see your face. Much better.
Oh, awesome.
Your microphone's off.
She's muted.
Yeah.
Judy, when you come in now, it says that your microphone's muted because of the size of the call or something.
No, there you are.
I know. I want to know how I can watch Hamilton for free.
Oh.
Well, that's easy.
Well, we tried to do it last night.
You have to put your pirate patch on, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Your VPN.
I'm sorry. I don't know what we're talking about. Did they just... Oh, they put it on Disney Plus?
Oh. Yeah, it came out yesterday.
I hadn't paid any attention at all.
It's Hamilton, the movie version.
So is it the production and they've cut it into a movie, or it's a whole different production?
I don't know. It's the movie.
Okay.
Nobody watched it yesterday? It came out yesterday.
No, I didn't even realize that it looks like a Disney Plus thing. I didn't realize they were doing this.
And I don't have Disney Plus. You can get a month Disney Plus for $6.95.
If you have a new Apple device, you've got a year of it.
I do not have a new Apple device.
I'm just saying, if you want to go out and spend $1,200 on something, you can watch TV for free. For a year.
$9.99 if you so desire a new iPhone.
I come bearing iCloud stuff, Apple stuff information from last week. And I think we're starting because it's 9 o'clock. So this is our regular time to start our meeting. I just want to say welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club. Looks like there's 10 of us here, and happy to have you with me. We're going to address some issues, some questions from last week, and some new stuff. But I did want to take a moment and mention it is the 4th of July, so happy 4th of July, everybody. And where was it I was just seeing? You know, George is doing the chicken ship bingo today. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
Oh.
And so that's going to start at 10 o'clock. That's going to start in about an hour. And he's going to stream it on YouTube so we can watch and see how it turns out after today, our meeting today.
My God, Scott, I didn't know you could stream chicken shit.
Well, you should spend some more time with George.
That's bullshit. That's not chicken shit.
But he's calling it, if you look for it on YouTube, I don't know if you can see my screen, it's called CS Bingo, July 4th, 10 a.m. He's got a scheduled stream ready to start. And he's got help doing it. I saw he was trying to do it. I tried to volunteer to give him some help, but I guess he already had help. So I know you're probably not leaving your house to celebrate for July 4th, but here's something you can do locally. Anyway. Chicken shit bingo in the traditional San Carlos way. What was that, Linda?
Yeah, I'm against that.
What's that?
I'm against that.
You're against chicken shit.
No, I'm against what he's doing.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Because of the circumstances.
I guess maybe this isn't an appropriate venue for circumstances. I'm not familiar with what's going on.
Well, he's holding it to benefit somebody who doesn't really deserve it.
Oh, I gotcha.
That's it. Your opinion. You need to.
Definitely an opinion. This is a safe place for opinions. It's okay. Until we start digging deep away from technology.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. That's great. Well, you've made it much more intriguing. Now I'm definitely going to watch. Well, and Hamilton, I didn't realize I'm going to put Hamilton on the list today, because I think if you want to watch Hamilton, you could probably find it using the Streamio app.
Oh, maybe. That's a good idea.
I'm going to look for it on Streamio.
What the heck? I thought you had a new Apple device.
And if you are using... Here comes Chester. Good morning, Chester. We've been rolling for a little bit here. Welcome. Thank you for joining us this morning. We were just talking about Hamilton being available on Disney Plus, and without Disney Plus, how might we be able to watch it? And we were talking about the Streamio app. And Streamio is available for Windows, Macintosh, Android, and...
No, Chester, don't present.
No presenting.
Chester, kick that off. I wonder if I can do it. Remove from me. I can kick you out of the meeting. I'm going to do it.
Chester, you're kidding me.
And Chester's gone.
This is like chicken shit bingo.
There you go. So, yeah,
tell me more about Streamio. Okay. Is this a paid app?
This is an app that you can download, and it is a community open. Well, actually, I think they're going to try and do advertising with it. It's definitely questionable.
How do you spell it, Scott?
Let me see here. Streamio. That's what I'm doing wrong, is I'm spelling wrong. Streamio. I think that's right. Yeah, Streamio. Here comes Chester again. Hello, Chester. Please don't hit the present button. Let's see.
He needs to turn on his microphone, though.
That's what he was trying to do.
There you go.
Hello, Chester. Good morning.
Streamio organizer.
Okay, I see. It's Streamio.
And when you click, you come up. Okay, Streamio.com. It's not an app.
It should be an app. It's in the Google Play Store. I was just looking. Oh yeah, it is in the Apple App Store.
Is it organizer?
No, this is a media. It's called Streamio. Is a modern media center. This is a one-stop solution for your video entertainment. We have been using, or I have been using this app for a few years now. I think Jim, Big Jim, turned me on to it a couple years ago.
But in the App Store for Apple, it says it's Streamio Organizer, Smart K-O-D-O-O-D.
Let me bring up the App Store here in front of me and see what it looks like. Open.
And it's black with a purple triangle and a white triangle.
Oh, well, that sounds right. Diamonds.
Yeah, it's a diamond and a triangle.
Okay, that must be it then. The organizer name or nomenclature is probably to the way of categorizing it in Apple so that they're not responsible for purchases.
Okay, and it gets a bad rating.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I haven't used it on iOS before. But the app works really well on Windows, and I've used it on Android for a long time without any problems. And it seems to me, I want to say Linux, but I don't see the download. Let me see the downloads here. Yeah. Yeah, I did use it on Linux, because I tried to use it on everything it was available for. I just don't have an iOS device. And the way this app works, in fact, I think I may have a copy of it. Do I have a copy of it installed in this computer? Streamio. Don't think I do. No, because I have an Android computer sitting right next to me. I've never bothered to install it in this particular computer.
Okay, Scott, what does it mean when it says this app may not be optimized for your device?
What app are we talking about?
Streamio. Comes up on my tablet and it says that.
You know, that probably has to do with your sound and video. It may be that you're using some software where a more robust piece of equipment could use hardware for decoding video and audio. And so it's probably telling you stuff like that. It's probably everything from the resolution of video, the screen abilities, like maybe your screen is a 720p screen and this app is capable of going up to 4K, but your device isn't. So it could be encoding, it could be physical limitations on the screen and the sound system. But I think it's just blanketing it, saying if you're not having a great experience, we're telling you this may not be the best device for it.
Now, okay.
The way Streamio works, and I wish I could get it on the screen. Maybe I should put it in my list and we should go through it next week. What it has are these things called plugins that are already available in the app. When you're using the app, it actually lays out a list of community plugins, and in the list, you can just hit an install button and it's immediately part of your application. Some of those community buttons include things like the Pirate Bay, a notorious BitTorrent site. When you include the plugins, or let me say that the interface you use is built up like a Netflix experience. You're looking at an inventory of content. I wonder if I can get Streamio presentation off of YouTube, or like a Roku screen. It's laid out in a tile, and it shows movie posters, and has synopsis. This looks like an Android presentation.
I can see the movies.
Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Tom Spark, and today we're taking a look at...
It's not on there. Well, it shows, but it says there's no streams found.
Okay, so that's where you need the plugin. If you go to the icon that looks like a puzzle piece,
yeah,
and you switch your categories to community.
To community.
Yeah, you should have three different categories. You should have sanctioned, you should have installed, and you should have community.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, now go through the community list, and you're looking for BitTorrents. Pirate Bay is one. There's another one that's 1337. Linda, do you happen to be doing this on the same computer we're having this meeting on? Can you turn on your presentation?
No, I'm doing it on my tablet.
Oh, okay.
And mine says for a list of playable streams and full experience, use Streamio on desktop. And I'm trying to use it on my iPad.
Ah, okay. So it may not end up working on the iPad. What's that, Linda?
It clicked on community, and then what you do?
Slide through, scroll that list. You're looking for BitTorrent services. You're looking for Pirate Bay. You're looking for 1337. Anything like that. And what I've learned from Streamio, more is not better. The correct one is best. So there's like two different Pirate Bay ones in there. There's Pirate Bay, and then there's one that's like a TPB Plus. There's Juan Carlos 2. Those are ones that are good. When you have these plugins installed, and like I said, it's as easy as clicking the install button. Then when you click on the content, it'll search those services and bring back links to start those videos.
Well, just put up in the search for Pirate Bay one word and it comes up.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So install that.
Okay.
Yeah. But why don't we just plan on, I'll get it installed in my computer and next week I can walk you through it.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, it's a simple thing to do, and the interface is very similar across Android and Windows and Mac OS. And so I think it's relevant. I'm sorry about the iOS thing's the thing that really throws me off.
Right.
The experience you're having sounds like the way iOS would deal with it.
And it looks like that I can get some of the movies if I add it, but I have to do something on my desktop before I can do anything. So we'll see.
If I had to speculate, what they're planning on doing is approaching content providers to make plugins. And so you would have, so any of the plugins in the future would only work if you were subscribers to those services.
Uh-huh.
But right now, it's these community plugins. Streamio has nothing to do with it except providing a platform that developers can develop on. They've chosen to develop plugins for the Pirate Bay, for 1331, for anime sites that are out there, for porn sites that are out there. But they have no affiliation with the video site or Streamio. They're independent developers doing it, similar to Kodi.
Well, Pirate Bay gets caught all the time, so is this a different Pirate Bay than...
No, it's the same Pirate Bay, and they really don't get caught all the time anymore. Nobody's that concerned about this kind of stuff anymore.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
What content providers have figured out, I mean, they will be, if they could flip a switch and turn it off, they would. If there was such a device where they could just hit a button and say, turn off all these pirators, they would. But what content providers have learned is that it is better to focus on creating great experiences for people at reasonable prices and drawing customers into those experiences so people don't mind paying the fees. These pirate experiences are just a hair more complicated than just owning Disney Plus. And so it's easier for normal people to own Disney Plus. Not in Mexico, though, because they haven't come to Latin America yet. Well, hey, I've got some topics that I'd like to go through. I think Hamilton's a great topic. And I think we should do Streamio next week. But I have a couple of things real quick, or maybe not so quick. I've got iCloud family sharing. I know that was a question last week. There's a question about Amazon, the Amazon Fire tablet, if you could install the Chrome browser. I got that info. There was a question about Roku browsers, which is kind of a funny answer. And there's an article out there where they have a study. They figured out 1,000 phrases that you can use to trigger smart speakers by accident. And I'd like to finish up with that. If you guys find any of that interesting, I'm just going to go ahead and get started. I know that some of you are Mac users. And so last week we were talking about iCloud on Macintosh and the family sharing, and I have found the page with the instructions if you wanted to follow along on an iPad or an iPhone. You can get to family sharing by going into settings. You should see your name there, your account. If you go into your account, under that you should find a family sharings heading. Under there, you will find the ability to manage a family. You'll have to give it a name. You'll have to add members to it. This will allow you to share content from your Apple services, such as movies you've rented or bought, music you've bought, or music services that you have, as well as apps that you've bought, or the Apple TV Plus service. One of you in the family can buy the Apple TV Plus service, make you a member of their family, and now you can take advantage of the Apple TV Plus. So this is interesting. It is the family sharing stuff is prefixed with authorized eligible services. So I think, from what I've heard, I haven't heard people complaining about the limitations in this service. I mean, I haven't heard somebody say, even though I purchased Apple, purchased a movie on Apple, my son wasn't able to watch it under the Apple Family Services. Though I believe that's what they've done, is they've left this open. There can be apps in the App Store that they opt out. They opt out of the family sharing option. I guess that could exist. All I'm saying is I haven't heard of anybody complaining about that. There's no charge for this family service, this family sharing service. So I recommend, like Cheryl, you and Bill should try creating families, at least one, and seeing if you can share the content that you've purchased on Apple to your other Apple devices.
Well, we found that the other day, the family sharing, and when we went into it, we were on Bill's iPhone, so he became the organizer automatically, and he was able to add my two accounts, but there's another account that Bill had with his Gmail, as opposed to an iCloud.
Okay.
And we were able to get him invited, but we cannot seem to confirm him being in there. So that's our number one thing. The other thing is, what I'm really looking for is not so much sharing of the apps that we purchase, but storage. So
the iCloud storage.
Yeah, the iCloud storage. And I need to know more about...
I made a summary here. Let me just quickly, because you can share eligible App Store, music, movie, TV, and book purchases. An Apple Music family subscription, an Apple Arcade subscription, Apple News Plus subscription, Apple TV channel subscriptions, Apple TV Plus subscription, and an iCloud storage plan. So it does exist. That is possible. So it's just a matter. Oh, I'm sorry, Judy. Go ahead.
It says six people.
For up to six people. That sounds right. You and five others.
Yes.
And so I'll put the link on today's meeting, but it's very simple. It's the I thought I put it in my synopsis, but I don't see it here. Damn it. I've lost it in the time I've found it.
It's under settings.
Oh, right. I was thinking that the instructions is what I was going to turn you on to. I was just looking at them.
And well, if you click on settings and then you click on your name and it says set up family sharing, and then it says get started and learn about and blah, blah, blah.
And that's what is on our phones. So I can go down it, and then it says shared features, and you have to turn them on or off. So there's purchase sharing, iCloud storage, location sharing, and the only thing we have on so far is purchase sharing.
Okay. So Apple has a document that's very good on all the different setup, whether you do it from your Macintosh or your iPad or your iPhone, to what is it you can share and how to manage the users. And I'll put that link on our website, but it's very easy. It's apple.com/family-sharing. And it goes into what this stuff is. And at the bottom of the page, it's got a button to get you started with it. And so that's a good read for any more detailed information you might be looking for on it. I'm looking at the page right now. Family sharing. Share your favorite things with your favorite people. And if you get down here to the bottom, You can share your 200 gigabyte plan or your 2 terabyte plan. These plans, if you buy into them, they sure make devices easier. I think I was telling you last week that I have a customer that's all Apple, all in. And it was a 200 gigabyte plan, and their two Apple Mac, their MacBooks and their iPhone, everything's going to the cloud. So the same pictures and the same documents show up everywhere. Their device
right.
is.
It's very handy.
Very, very handy. Your desktop is the same when you're on your computers. Your access to your documents is the same across your mobile devices. Your pictures are all there for you to look at. So you take a picture with your phone and you go into Photos on your Macintosh and it's right there. You don't have to worry about connecting a phone and downloading pictures, anything like that. What you do have to do is you have to pay a monthly fee.
Right. I'm still on the 99-cent plan, but it's just me, my iPhone, my MacBook, and my iPad. So,
I have a question on Google.
Yes.
I thought you were supposed to share your pictures, like, off your phone onto your, like, tablet or desktop, but you have to plug your phone into your desktop. Isn't that true? Because that's what I've noticed.
No. If you're running Google Photos on your phone.
Yeah.
And you're signed into your Google account, then you can choose to have those backed up to Google Cloud in either two different formats, either in a lower resolution under unlimited for free, which is what I recommend to everybody, no matter what device you have, or you can pay for cloud storage and you'll get something like a terabyte or something in it. In fact, I think this is a great topic.
Go to the library?
Let me pull up Photos on my my phone here in front of me.
Yeah, Google Photos.
Yeah, and in its settings, you get to choose how you're going to upload these to your... Come on, I'm trying to talk and find an app at the same time. Good thing I'm not trying to chew gum.
Under your picture?
Yes, under your picture. The version of Google Photos I'm running on my phone right now has a picture in the upper right-hand corner. And
correct.
And under that, there is...
Photo settings?
Do you have something that says backup?
Yes.
Okay. No, it doesn't.
Mine's backup complete, but I plugged it into my laptop.
You know what? You're right. It is... Under photo settings, it's the first one. It says backup and sync.
Okay.
And then under backup and sync, it's got your Google account, and it lets you choose upload photos and videos to your Google account. And upload size under settings on that page. Mine is set to high quality, free, unlimited storage. But if you were to buy... You could buy 100 gigabytes, it shows here, for 34 pesos a month. So it's like $17 a month you could buy 100 gigabytes. That sounds pretty expensive to me.
Well, mine just says high quality, free backup at high resolution, free unlimited storage.
Well, what that means, if you were to click on that, you'd see your options. But what that means is that Google will give you free storage. You will downgrade your pictures to a lower quality, and trust me, it's not noticeable for the majority of the photos that we take as individuals. Okay. Well, who would be concerned about free, lower quality photo storage would be photo professionals that are in the process of capturing something very specific and wanting it to get up to the cloud in that format, in its pristine entirety. Those people should buy space, and they should use that bot space to do the exact picture. And if you've got iDevices, it looks to me like that's a better deal if that's your issue. Because because the iCloud storage is $3 a month for 200 gigabytes of space. But
okay, but Scott, here's my issue. We're using iPhones as the cameras.
Yes.
And we've got one iPad, which I cannot upgrade the iOS, so it's quite.
You want to hear a crazy idea? You could install Google Photos on your iDevices.
Well, we have.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to figure out is if I would be better off buying Google Photo storage or iCloud.
No, I would not recommend that because of the price we're seeing here. It's three times the price for half the space.
But if I only buy my storage on the iCloud, what am I going to do when I have my Windows machine, which is where I need to do my editing and...
Oh, I see what you're saying. So we've got a new question, actually, because you can use iCloud on your Mac, on your Windows machine. I've got iCloud installed, and it does do photo syncing, but I'm not sure what the advantages and disadvantages, what the limitations of doing that on a Windows machine become. I know it's possible. In fact, I'm trying to bring it up now. I know that I've got photos. I'm looking at my photos right now. Here, I'll show you what I'm looking at. I'm in iCloud on Windows 10 right now. I've got a shared folder that I never use inside my pictures folder on my Windows PC. I don't have I have some Macintoshes, but I haven't used this feature. But what it's basically telling me is I should be able to go into my home folder. No, I should be able to go into my pictures folder. And I should find, hopefully, nothing inappropriate. let's see here.
A long time ago in a farm.
I hang on to so much data, who knows what I'm going to find in my computer. iCloud Photos. There you go. I'm in iCloud Photos. And here's a screenshot I made on my Macintosh from 2 years ago. Trying to open right now. There we go. Hi, Sierra. So cool. That's not mine.
Okay, so just back up a little bit there, Scott, because I finally figured out that if I do the thumbtack on yours, it comes up bigger, but it's not focused.
It's pretty fuzzy. Yeah, I haven't turned on the presentation. Let me turn on the presentation and see if I can get a better picture. My entire screen. I am on this screen. I'm talking to myself because that's the way I think. Okay, let's see if this works. This will take a moment. Are you seeing my screen?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm on
Windows. No, not now.
No?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I am in Windows 10. I am just looking for iCloud. So I hit the start button and I started typing ICL. There it is at the top. I'm going to turn it on. I hope this is clearer to see now.
No, actually, it's a little bit worse.
No, I think it's better. But it's not there now.
It's taking forever. Hold on. Come on. There we go. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
So I'm in iCloud. And the only reason I've come in here is to look at photo options. So I'm hitting the photo options. And it's turned on right here, iCloud photo sharing. Share photos with just the people you choose. Let them add photos, videos, comments. Here it is, the iCloud photo library. That's probably the one you want. Upload and store your PC photos in iCloud. Access photos and videos from all your devices. I was saying, I don't use this on Windows 10, so I'm not an expert in this. I'm happy to help you sort it out, but I don't have any quick right off the top of my head stuff.
Do you think that that means that you could use that across your Apple devices as well as your PC?
Yes, absolutely. I think that Apple is trying to sell services, and they want you to get into their services as easily as possible.
So I feel like I have a light bulb over my head.
Yeah, so this should bring your iCloud service to your PC. And you should be able to share photos with your family, as well as this would be available when you signed into your account, your iCloud account on your PC. I hope that helps.
That's awesome.
Now,
wow.
Now I got to turn this thing off. Well, you guys might be surprised by our ability to do this. I'm surprised by the pricing we just found on Google. I was not expecting to see them trying to get us to buy a service that would be a third the price of what Apple's charging for half the storage space. That caught me off guard.
So what was the cost from Google?
From Google, this would be interesting too. If you go into Google Photos on your own device and see what they're trying to charge you, I have a button that's obviously a variable, and it says buy 100 gigabytes for 34 pesos a month. I don't know if you guys can see that. In blue, which tells me that's variable probably based on what country I'm in, but maybe it's also variable depending on who I am. Maybe if you go into your photos program, maybe it's giving you a different price, but it's offering me 100 gigabytes at $12 a month. I wouldn't buy that. Not when I could buy iCloud space for $3 a month.
Right.
For 200 gigabytes, and all I need is one Apple device in my life to take advantage of it. I can sign up for iCloud on my Android device. I can sign up for it on my Windows 10 devices. I guess my Unix computer, my Linux computer, I would have trouble taking advantage of it. But I could still go to the website. I could go to iCloud.com and get access to those files and folders that are there. So right now, it looks like that's a much better bang for your buck is the Apple stuff. Are you guys interested in anything more? Where did my to-do list go? All of a sudden, I've lost everything I'm trying to talk about. There it is. If you're doing Apple stuff and you're interested in the family sharing stuff, that is apple.com/family/sharing, and I'll stick it on today's post. If you're reading through today's post, you can get to it through there. I recommend reading the pages because it makes it very clear. It's the first time it's been very clear to me how family sharing works. I've been listening to tech people talk about it as a concept, and I found Apple's document the clearest thing so far. There was last week. I am done.
Just before you leave that.
Yes.
I just looked at Google Photos, and mine would be Canadian $279 a month for 100 gigabytes, $399 a month for 200 gigabytes.
That first price, how does that translate into dollars for you?
Wait a minute. The 2 terabyte is $13.99 a month, which is exactly the same as the 2 terabyte on iCloud.
So iCloud is cheaper until you hit 2 terabytes, and then it's the same price as Google?
Well, I've got 15 gig free, 100 gig, $27.99 a year, 200 gig.
Oh, look at this. I should have went deeper into it, shouldn't I? Because you can get 200 gigabytes for 50 pesos.
That's like $2.50.
So it's only the 100 gig that's more expensive. The 200 gigabytes cheaper on Google, just a hair. And
2 terabyte on on Apple, $9.99 iCloud.
How much?
$9.99.
$100.
Yeah, $9.99 US compares to $13.99 Canadian.
Yeah.
99 pesos a month? Is that what you're saying? No.
$9.99 US.
$10 a month US for 2 terabytes.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, and then 2 terabytes on Google is 169 pesos a month. That's closer to $8 to $9.
So it's cheaper.
So the Google is cheaper if you're going up above 100 gigabytes. At 100 gigabytes, it's cheaper to do iCloud.
I have a 50 gigabyte plan with iCloud for 99 cents a month.
Now, I noticed on the family sharing, I guess we're still not done with this topic. I noticed on the family sharing it wasn't offered for the 50 gigabyte.
No, it's just the two options, the 2 terabyte.
Or the 200 gigabytes.
Yeah.
See, I'm still on the 50 for 99 cent plan.
I think that's good. I mean, especially if you're just a user of equipment, if you're not a big creator of media content.
Right.
Photos. Yeah, photos.
I've got like 14,000 photos. But
are you running out of space?
Not yet. They haven't told me yet. They will. They'll tell me soon.
You know what was really cool with my customer? Because they had 3 different devices that had gotten there had been no thinking in how these devices would interact with each other. So each one had its own iCloud account, but they only purchased storage with one of the accounts. One was an old 2008 MacBook. Another one was a 2017 MacBook, a relatively new one. And it was an iPhone, I think it was an iPhone 8 that I was working with. And they had pictures on each one of these devices. And one of their frustrations was they just didn't have them all together. And I did a series of updates, and then I standardized on one iCloud account because it's one user. I would have done it differently if there are other users in the household. But there's only one user, 3 devices to one person. And so I signed in each device to iCloud. And then I went and I took their photo library from each device and dumped it into iCloud. And so they found photos that they had missing for 10 years because it was sitting in some old iPhoto library from an old laptop.
So if you have an old iPhone, this isn't me, but and you can't get the photos off of that phone because they won't transfer it to your new phone, you could actually possibly load them to the cloud and then back.
That's exactly what you can do.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as I think your iOS version needs to be 11 or higher.
Oh, that could be a problem with it's my neighbor's phone. That could be a problem.
Well, the other option would be to dump them into a computer that has access to photos.
Okay.
So you can take the phone and synchronize it with the computer and then dump that into photos on an iCloud storage service. And it would immediately be synchronized into iCloud.
Okay.
But it was just a really neat experience for this customer because their pictures were all over the place. And now, whether they pick up the phone, their new computer, or the old computer, they go into photos, and it's all their photos. It's every photo they've ever had.
Just because we're making a YouTube video of this, the Cunningham family need to see this part of this.
Shout out to Jim. Jim, you need to be watching this.
Linda has done a blog over a few years, and she has a hard time because she thinks they're in one place. She said the cloud just freaks her out. But anyways, I think we might have some solutions for her.
We do now. You know, we all have been together so long. There was a time when we would never have recommended this as a solution. We lived through San Carlos with horrible internet and really low internet speeds, and this is not a solution. 5 years ago, this is not a solution, not for us. Maybe in places like New York or San Francisco, Seattle, even Anchorage, Alaska, maybe this was a solution 5 years ago, but it wasn't in San Carlos. And now it's so totally a solution.
Do you remember the Internet Cafe?
Hey, remember it? I helped put it together. I had to bring it back to life.
So, Scott, speaking of internet speed, how are you liking your internet?
It's great. You know, Judy, this is something that I need to put this on the list of meetings. We should do a regular just update on how's Juan's internet. Because, like, right now, all morning, it's been beautiful. I've been getting more internet over the week than I've ever had in my house. But there are times. There are times when it just, and I'm not certain where it's happening. I feel like my connection to his antenna over here is fine. So it's either Telmex or it's something between his antenna and Telmex. And I need to talk to him again because I'm not sure whether it's fiber optics out here or if he's got fiber optics in a central location and he's beaming them over here, which would be fine. I mean, the truth is this is all based on the old WiMAX 4G stuff. This is what I believe. And it's totally capable of beaming hundreds of megabytes over wirelessly as long as it's set up correctly. But I need to find out from him exactly how this is hooked up so we can narrow down where this bottleneck keeps occurring.
He's got units up in what's that big old hotel called that's like apartments? Gringo Pete's. He's got equipment up there because somebody turned off the one router that went to my house one time, and he had to go and turn it back on. So
he tries to keep us balanced from what I – like when I got service, he talked to me candidly about I need to get to the server and allocate you an IP address so that you can be part of the network. And so he's keeping track of which antenna people are on and trying to balance them, service, quality versus capacity.
And I'm on his second tower, and my neighbor across the street is on the first tower. And that's how I knew that it was some problem with his router.
Well, I'm on the tower in my neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
I've got an antenna pointing like a couple hundred meters away.
Wow.
And so I've had great experience until I haven't had great experience. But in general, it's been really good. I'm very impressed with it. By next week, I'll have backup Telmex working with my DSL. I've probably mentioned before I got a load balancing router so I could take the two internet connections in at the same time. And feed, use one or the other automatically. So we'll see if that makes any improvements. I really just want a backup because there are times when it just isn't working. But I have to say it's working more often than not, and that's I'm happy with that.
It'll be interesting when all of us that are gone and have our service shut off temporarily, what happens then?
That's exactly what I want to gear towards. I want to be able to take advantage of the capacity when it's there, but have a backup when it's not.
Right.
Well.
Let me mention something that's kind of funny.
Okay.
A little bit earlier in this conversation, I have the captions running because it's kind of fun. And you mentioned the word porno.
Yes.
And the captions printed XXXXX.
That's awesome.
You're out, it's awesome.
I do text chat by voice with friends and customers because I'm on my phone. It's easier to talk to it and have it type for me. And every time I say the word fuck, it puts little asterisks through the word. I could have typed the word, but because I spoke it, it censored me.
Yeah, it just did it.
So how do you put it onto voice so that you can talk? What are you using? Are you using WhatsApp or what?
Whatever. I use a keyboard you use a keyboard on your iOS device or your Android device.
Right.
And the keyboard is what allows you to turn on a microphone and talk to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so look on
it. It's just a little microphone icon.
Yeah, look for a microphone icon on your keyboard.
Okay.
And it's very...
I have one question for you. Google Drive, Google Photo.
Yes.
Two different things?
Well, yes, because Google Photo is an app, and Google Drive is a service. Google Drive is where data is stored. Google Photo is like a viewer for it. And so,
okay, so when they're selling you storage, is it in Google Drive or is it in Google Photo?
You have the best questions.
Well, I was just...
what I can tell you about iCloud is when you buy storage, it's your Google Photo, it's your photos. In iCloud, it's the same storage space. I know that for a fact.
Well, I just went in and my Google Drive has some things shared with it in the form of photos, mm-hmm. but my Google Photo, when I log into it, those files aren't there. So it seems like they're two different things in Google.
You know what I've done is I've gone into my Android device and I've gone into Google Drive and I've gone into buy more storage space.
Right.
And it's the exact same plan.
So it would be attached to your Google account.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Definitely attached to your Google account if you're buying it from Google. That Google Photos where you could buy more storage space, you're specifically mm-hmm. buying it for your Google account. And actually, I'm glad we're talking about it again because what I was going to mention was – I would use the same Google account across my devices just that I had that space on if I wanted to use the space. But I was mentioning install Google Photos on all your devices, whether they're Apple or they're Android, mm-hmm. because of the free unlimited lower quality pictures. And you can avoid having to buy storage space. And you can have your pictures all in the same place. If you use the same Google account on all your devices – then when you go into Google Photos, it's all the same photos, regardless of the device you're using.
But, yeah, and then the other thing you have to do is you have to make sure that your settings aren't saving them to the device as well as to the Google Photo, because that's what we're running into is when I'm running out of storage in iCloud, but I'm also running out of storage
in Google.
On the phone.
Oh, in the phone. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it seems like under the iCloud model, they've got an option to optimize your storage. I'm not sure if that works for Google Photos. Maybe you'd have to roll with both. Maybe you would do... No, how would you do that? Because it seems like there's an option to store optimized. Maybe I'm thinking of Google. You know what? What's obvious is I'm still not ready for this conversation. Everything's speculation. I don't have any of that in my mind.
But it is giving me places where I can go to figure this all out.
Yeah.
Scott, question, Scott. How do you compare the iCloud and the Amazon cloud to the Microsoft 365?
You know what? I don't have a good reference for Amazon right now. I'm very familiar with Microsoft's, but I haven't looked at what Amazon's doing. It seems like Amazon has servers where you can buy a Windows 10 virtual machine and have it loaded up with Office if that's what you need, or a Photoshop if that's what you need, and they sell that to you at a monthly subscription price. But I'm not really that familiar with that model or had much experience with it. I think the you have had the Microsoft experience, and that model is pretty straightforward. You have Office available to you. You have a terabyte of storage available to you. That terabyte of storage, you can install OneDrive in your in your iPhone, so you can take advantage of it there. You can install it in your Android tablets, and you can take advantage of it there, as well as your Windows 10 and your Macintosh computers. So it's a comparable storage space. I think it's a better price because you get an office suite with it, and you get a terabyte, and that's like $100 a year if you buy it, right? Or you know, $70 a year if you really just buy it for yourself.
Oh, Scotty, when you got a chance, I got a question for you.
Sure. Chester, does that help?
Yes, that helps. Thank you.
Yes. Scotty.
Was that Irving?
No, that's Stanley.
Oh, hey, Stanley.
Yeah.
Irving's not with us.
I didn't see him come in yet. How do I reboot? I did this during a session with Microsoft, but I forgot how to do it. How do we reboot into safe mode on Windows 10, if you know?
Ooh, safe mode on Windows 10. This is a pain. Let me Google it real quick. It's a jumping through hoops, if I remember right. Start your PC in safe mode in Windows 10. Let me make a note of this link copy. I'll stick it on today, too. Oh, okay. Do you have access to the computer? Are you in regular Windows right now, or the reason you're going into safe mode is because you can't get in? Stanley, are you there?
Okay, the reason I want safe mode is that problem I'm having with deleting the to-do list is rectified when you go into safe mode.
Okay, so you have full access to your computer. You're not repairing a startup problem. You just want to get into safe mode to make some changes. So,
right. So, the safe mode is just for that one problem.
So the easiest way to do that is this set of instructions. They're probably blurry on your screen, but you would press the Windows key, hold down the Windows key and press R, and that opens up a run box. And then in the run box, you would type msconfig. You might remember msconfig from previous versions of Windows. I think it's been around at least as long as Windows XP.
Yeah, I've used it quite a bit.
So that's how you'd start it in Windows 10. And then in this config, you'd go over to the boot tab. You've got general boot. It's a list of tabs. You go over to the boot tab, and there's a checkbox for safe boot.
Oh.
And so you put a checkbox in safe boot, and then you click OK. And then it asks you if you want to restart. And the next time it restarts, it's going to restart in safe mode.
Okay, thank you. You're right. I've got to go through a few hoops.
Yeah.
All right.
Scott.
There is a way to do that from boot up, but it's painful. I'd have to look up those instructions.
Scott, does it reset after you've gone into safe mode once and it goes back to normal?
It's in a very hideous Microsoft fashion. Your computer continues to remind you of the change you made and give you a button to go back to msconfig and restore it back to defaults. But until you do, it will continue to do the same thing and continue to remind you to change it back.
Oh, I did it when we used it on the next boot up, it went back to normal.
I hope you have that experience. That's not my experience in general, but I use msconfig to do a lot of debugging, and we might find that something as simple as checkmarking safe boot goes back the next time you boot up. We might find that out. I really am just digging into the archive of my brain.
Okay, I got it. So it's Windows R for run, and then just msconfig.
Yep, that's right. And I'll put a link to that article in today's today's post too, so that we've got it. Windows safe modes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Stanley.
I have a question about Yahoo Mail.
Okay.
Does anybody use Yahoo Mail?
Crickets.
Yeah, I know. I don't either, but my friend is unable to move things from Yahoo Mail into other folders. Like, she's got a folder for like insurance and that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden she can't move it. And when she talked to Yahoo, they told her it was somebody trying to hack her account. And they had her download this, what's it called? It's called...
It's not the Yahoo Mail client, is it?
No, but it's something about, it's a DMG.
Okay, what so is, she's on a Macintosh. A DMG would be a disk image, so it's an installer. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so had her download that, and then they were going to call her back last night to confirm that everything was fixed. Well, they never called back, and I told her I thought she ought to delete that DMG download, and they told her not to do any banking because somebody had been trying to hack into her email account.
Who is she talking to?
Supposedly Yahoo. She got the number off the Yahoo.com site.
No.
I know. And I said, don't do that. I said, number one, your banking has nothing to do with your Yahoo. That is correct, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, because you do so many things in a web browser, there are ways to technically connect the two. But in general, you wouldn't think of it like that. You would think of it as two separate activities.
Right. That's okay.
So the compromise of your email, though, could be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's.
I told her to delete that DMG program and call on Monday and talk to somebody else at Yahoo about the specific email problem that she's having.
Yes.
And that it's, okay, nothing to do with her banking. That was her big thing because this woman told her, don't do any banking. That makes no sense.
Like, it could be... I mean, I can imagine different scenarios where the easiest thing to tell somebody that's not really understanding what's going on is don't do any banking. Like it could be you're using an old version of Mac OS Mail, and the mail program doesn't support an encryption certificate Yahoo has.
No, she actually goes on Yahoo.com to look at her mail.
Okay, all right. But I'm just trying to imagine different scenarios where you might tell somebody that. And I can't imagine it through a web browser.
I couldn't either. Yeah. So
I guess I
was hoping
I can if she was able to get at her mail without an encryption certificate, which I hope I hope Yahoo doesn't allow. The best way to think about that would be if she was able to go to yahoo.com HTTP, no S.
Oh, I will. Okay, I'll ask her that.
If she was able to get there with no S, then what that means is her traffic is out there in the open. And anybody monitoring that traffic can see things like password resets.
Okay.
So that would be a reason if somebody wasn't quite sophisticated and I had to change my language, I would say something like, we'll get it fixed, but just don't do anything like banking right now.
And maybe that's what she said. But when she said that they had her put this AnyDesk DMG
on... Is it AnyDesk?
It is AnyDesk. Okay.
AnyDesk is some great software.
Okay, it's okay.
Yeah, it's remote access software. I've been using it for weeks now. I became aware of it. I've used TeamViewer for years. But I started running into problems helping people remotely with different versions of their Macintosh computers. And so AnyDesk has filled that hole, and it works really well. Oh, pardon me. Works really well.
That did allow this person at Yahoo access to her computer, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and actually the most recent version of AnyDesk, if you actually install it in your Macintosh, it's kind of a pain to get it to stop starting up. And
okay.
And so it's less of a pain in older versions of the operating system. It's the newer versions of the operating systems that become much more. No, do I have that right? No, it's still a pain. It's a different way to do it in an older version versus a newer version.
So if she just deletes that,
it's not going to do anything. It's like throwing the CD away that has the software.
Okay.
It's not going to change her installation. She would have to uninstall it if she wanted to get rid of it. What I would prefer, in my experience, what you want to do is you want to stop it from starting up automatically.
Okay, so go to the start menu, you know, wherever that is, and don't start automatically. Okay.
Yeah, if it's starting automatically, you want to sort out why it's starting automatically, and it's different based on what version of the Macintosh she's using. If she's using Catalina or Big Sur, it's different from High Sierra or Sierra.
She may have upgraded. Not Big Sur isn't out yet, right?
It's out, I think. You might have got me. It may be only out for developers right now. Catalina, what's the one? Mojave. Mojave's really the pivot. So, you know, when you talk about the TikTok, Mojave was the tick and Catalina's the talk. Mm-hmm. Big Sur's the next big tick. So at Mojave, they changed the way that they did securities for things like this. And I think that you can find under permissions in system preferences.
Okay.
I think she can find something to take the checkbox out of, or you can use the minus sign to remove from startup.
Okay.
If not, have her get a hold of me and I can help her do it remotely using any desk.
Okay.
This is Paul. Oh, okay.
What's that, Paul?
Okay, I just wanted to insert here that I put in chat the name of that video.
Yes, you did. I've been watching you.
Oh, you watched the video?
No, I saw that it was there.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that I inserted that.
Cool.
That's all.
Yeah, we should have dropped the link in there. But these are the searches for YouTube that you can do to find these, right?
That's the exact title. Man plays with explosive chemicals.
I hope you've been able to pay attention to Club while searching this out.
No, you guys were talking about eye stuff, and I don't eye stuff.
Man plays with explosive chemicals.
Yeah, and what that is a cover because. I couldn't find it.
Let me show you how we run a successful business using stock footage. Go to artgrid.io.
When I hear unlimited downloads.
This is my drunk uncle, Steve, trying to teach us something about flammable chemicals. This is an ode to 4th of July.
Oh, you're going to play it? Good. The other really good video is Exploding Whale. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Fucking cheap. Yes.
Exploding whale sounds disgusting. I can just imagine.
It is disgusting. But anyway, let's watch this and then I'll tell you about exploding whale.
Are you guys hearing the banjo? I don't know if you've got audio.
No.
No audio.
You don't need audio. This is self-explanatory.
I'm going to turn on my outside speaker.
Hi there. This is Al Seer.
Here's our genius right here.
Experimenting with fireworks for Halloween. And I think I've perfected the mixture with sulfur. And I'm using some...
Oh, the building banjos in addition to the original.
I'm going to light this, and it should just sparkle a little bit.
Should just sparkle a little bit, he says.
actually, I think I'll turn the light out. So it shows up better. Okay, let's try this out here.
First we start the match, and then we'll... This is a long fuse.
Oh, it is? Oh, Jesus!
Holy smokes. A little too much magnesium, I guess.
a little too much magnesium.
Sorry about that.
I'm surprised he has any eyebrows. Okay, let me tell you about explosive whales. Along the coast of Oregon, a whale washed up.
Holy smokes.
And the whale was a problem, so they got the highway department to put 8 million tons of dynamite under the edge of the whale. And the idea was they were going to blow it to little teeny bits that would wash away the tide.
I think I've heard this story before.
And so they told the press, and the press came, and, well, they made people park their cars a quarter of a mile away from the whale before they blew it up. And they had people stand a quarter of a mile away. Well, when they set that charge off, chunks of whale came flying over, and one chunk weighed a couple hundred pounds, landed on top of somebody's car. But in general, people were being rained on by rotten whales.
Sounds like a wonderful show. I have heard that story somewhere before. That's just crazy.
So that's the exploding whale, the Oregon coast.
Hey, I had brought a couple other topics. If you guys want to stay with me, I've got two other things you guys were talking about last week. One is the Amazon Fire tablet. Somebody's got a new tablet in their life. I don't remember who.
Me.
It's Bill. And
I bought it last year from Big Jim at one of your computer weeks.
So was it you that was asking me about setting up Chrome in it, a different browser?
Yeah. Yes.
So you would start with installing the Google Play Store in your tablet. And so I'm not going to go through that right now, but I'll put a link on today's topics so that you can follow the instructions on how to get the Google Play Store on your tablet. Because it's an Amazon device, I'll just go through it quick in a nutshell. You got to open up the securities so that you can install apps from third parties. So there's instructions on how to get into the Amazon settings on the tablet so that you can make it possible to install the software from other places other than Amazon. That's what I'm trying to get to. It's just a switch. You go into settings and switch. But then because it's not a Google device, the Play Store isn't right in front of you. And so you do have to track down the Play Store application outside of the Amazon Store, outside of the Google Play Store, because you don't have it installed yet. So you have to get it from a third-party location. This article on How to Geek has links to the Google Play Store as archived, as open source software, out on the internet. I'm emphasizing this because this is one of the areas that manufacturers are giving you security. You buy an Android device that has Google Play Store. You can't install anything unless it comes out of the Google Play Store. You buy an Amazon device, it comes with the Amazon store. You can't install software unless it comes from the Amazon store. Unless you turn off your security. You turn off your security, then you can install software from other places. You're very familiar with installing software from other places. You do it on your Windows computer all the time. This is the equivalent of only getting your software for your Windows computer through the Microsoft Store. That's what the equivalence is. And that's the level of security they're giving you is, we vetted these apps so you don't have to. Get them all from this one place and you're more secure. So it's important to me you recognize that's the level of security, the level of compromise you're opening up to yourself. It's not a high level. But that's how they say they're giving you so much security, is they're blocking your ability to install from someone else.
Yep. I got it.
Okay, so this article will have links to those softwares for the Google Play Store and the Google Play services. After those are installed in your tablet, then you'll have a Google Play icon on your tablet. And from there, you can install Chrome. You can find in Google Play the Chrome app, and you can download and install it.
Okay. I think I just discovered a problem that my sister has. She always tells me that she can't download the Zoom because her Amazon tablet
doesn't have the app available to it.
So every time we have a Zoom meeting, she has to go in a different way, or it asks her to purchase. Like, it's been painful. But I think I just discovered what I need to do.
Yes, and all these Android devices have an ability to turn that security off, and it's like a Windows computer. Now you can go to any website and download the app you want. I'm not recommending you do that. But I do think the Google Play Store is as secure as the Amazon App Store. I don't think they're any more or less secure. And so having that installed in your Amazon device makes sense to me, so you have more access to applications. So I'll put that link on today's post on the website, so you can find that easy enough. A quick one with Roku. Somebody had asked me about browsing the internet on a Roku. We're not going to waste a lot.
Well.
Oh, well, Bill, we could just sit and have this. Everybody else can go now if you like. But what I discovered in my research is that the Roku devices are horrible for web browsing. But they do have two web browsers. They've got a really bad one, and then they've got a worse one. The really bad one is the best one. No. Yeah, the really bad one is the best one for surfing the internet on a Roku. However, it will tip you upside down and shake out your pockets for money without you paying attention. Because if you do get into it, you are buying into a $5 a month subscription model. So it's not a recommendation. The other web browser, the worst one, is literally worse. Not worth your time. You've got enough devices to surf the internet on. It's not recommended for surfing the internet on a Roku. Now, that being said, there are a lot of different ways to get web pages onto a TV set through a Roku. And this article, while chastising these web browsers, does bring that information up and is available. So I'll put this link on today's post as well, so that if you want to explore this further, it will be there.
So Scott, if my friend in Georgia wants to contact you, how does she do that?
She can call my cell phone. She can reach me on Facebook. She can reach me on email. She can email scott@internationalcs.net.
Okay.
All those options. She can go to our website, internationalcs.net, and send me an email off of that. She can use the computer club, too.
Says that there is no S after her HTTP when she logs into Google Mail or Yahoo Mail.
Okay.
So we'll see what's going on.
Yeah. Anyway, that would be a reason to be told. Yes. Don't do banking.
When I log into Yahoo Mail and I have a Yahoo account that I don't use, it's actually HTTPS. So
yeah. And what's really interesting now is most browsers aren't showing you that stuff. Like, if you look at the top of a Google Chrome session, you'll typically...
is Chrome.
So what you typically see is just the name of the address.
Okay.
And it'll have a little lock up there.
Yeah, I suggested... I don't know.
When HTTPS isn't available, then it shows HTTP. But when HTTPS is available, it hides it from you.
Perfect. Okay. Mm-hmm. I asked her to send a screenshot. I don't know whether she needs to knows how to do that or not. But anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Hey, Judy, can I give you one more thing? Do you have just another moment?
Yes.
Well, I want to do this thing with you guys, if you're interested. There is an article, and I'll link to it. The 1,000 phrases that can incorrectly trigger Alexa, Siri, and Google Assistant, and Cortana. I want you to read through this. This is, and I've got a challenge for you guys. I think, from what I read, it would be possible to tell an Echo to do something in a normal conversation. Because of what they found out, because of the trigger words, I think it's possible to turn on an Alexa and have it perform a task while masquerading as normal conversation. And I think the challenge should be to come up with the phrase that would create a task. I'm calling this speaker hacking. Like smart speaker hacking, and we'll have this in the background of our computer club for a few weeks, at least until somebody comes up with a phrase. But I know some of you have smart speakers in your midsts right now. You've got them in your lives, and you're playing with them, and you're seeing what capabilities they have. And I don't care what the capability is. Maybe it's turning on a smart light. Maybe it's starting a song. Maybe it's asking a question, like who's in that movie. I don't care what it does, but I want to find a phrase that can be said out loud, masquerading as just regular dialogue, that would turn on your Echo and ask it to perform a task. And this article is a great way to get started. It's an Ars Technical article that's referencing a study that's been done where they've uncovered all these words that accidentally trigger Cortana, they trigger Siri, they trigger Alexa. And one of the examples with Alexa is the word election will set off your Echo. Right? It just as an example, the word election. So I think over the next few weeks, as you guys are playing with your smart speakers, keep this in the back of your mind. I think we're going to be able to come up with a sentence that can be said in normal conversation, and it will tell a smart speaker to do something.
Scott, this
yes,
sounds
sure.
like a really fun activity, but let me share with you. We got a new GPS 2 years ago, and it has the function where you can do a voice command. And usually you have to say voice command for it to be activated.
Okay.
We'll be driving down the road talking, and all of a sudden it'll say, say a command.
Well,
we have no idea what sets it off.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And we have those experience with these smart speakers all the time, where all of a sudden Echo is chirped up and it's waiting to do something. And you don't know what we've said. It's something off the TV set. It's something off the radio. It's something we've said in general conversation. So I think we should start with this article and then start playing with our smart speakers and see if we can come up. Let's just get it to do something dumb with some standard. Like, it'd be, can you go check with the neighbors for a cup of sugar? And what that really does is it tells Alexa to start playing Metallica music in the background.
So really you're talking in code.
Right, exactly. I suspect that while they're trying to perfect these interfaces, we're going to find just lists of things that can be done occultly, that can be thrown into advertising, maybe almost intentional. I don't know if you guys remember, but when Echo first came on the scene, during one of the big Super Bowls, it was Taco Bell or it was Pepsi. It was one of those big name brands. They used a trigger word the and a phrase that set the smart speaker off to go to their promotion. So, like, in the midst of their promotion, it was some Super Bowl ad. They had mentioned Alexa, and they had said something like you would to your Echo. And it started up the Echo, and it came back with something like, save $5 on your next trip to Taco Bell. But it was very intentional. And Alexa and Cortana and Apple looked at that, and they said, oh, wait, we can't have advertisers doing that. And so they started...
Unless they pay us.
That's exactly, Bill. That's exactly what they were concerned about. And so they started fingerprinting words that advertisers would use so that they were... So now all the dialogue in advertising does not trigger anything, but we're still finding other trigger words. But you can bet if there's a Burger King commercial out there, Apple has already recorded the audio of it, and they have put that into the Siri algorithm, saying, when you hear this, do not do anything. They're waiting for Burger King to call them and go, hey, you know what? Can you have Siri do this if there's an advertisement on the TV set? Can you have the phone say, hey, here's a $10 discount on your next $50 of purchase? Anyway, please check out the link. I'm not thinking specifically for next week, but next week's stories would be fun. But we'll come back to this again as we find more information. As far as I'm concerned, I feel like we've come to the end of a really nice meeting. I've had a lot of fun talking to you guys. We've had a good back and forth with no real interference. I think it all went really good.
Very clear.
Very nice.
I look forward to seeing you guys every week. You're one of the highlights of my week.
And happy 4th to everyone.
Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Be safe.
I think I won this round on the coffee mug.
You did. But.
Oh, no.
I beat you in the shorts.
No, these are my pajamas.
You got to wear them.
Even on that one.
It doesn't count if you don't wear them.
Okay.
I still have my Winnie the Pooh on.
You guys have an awesome 4th of July, and I'll talk to you next week, if not sooner.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hang up. Well, that was the San Carlos Computer Club, and I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. Happy that you joined us. Hope you got something out of it, and hope you return to us. If in the future you find things like this helpful, please check us out at sccclub.org. Look for our YouTube channel, sccclub.org. And if you have computer stuff, issues that you'd like to help get resolved, I'll help you do it. Get a hold of me, scott@internationalcs.net. That's our website, internationalcs.net. We do computer work. We do remote work. We do repairs. We do programming. We do software. We do all kinds of things. We're in Mexico in a vacation town called San Carlos, and it's where we like to work from. Until next week, everybody, if I can get in this camera, tech on.